We are now in our featured segment once again, ladies and gentlemen. And this morning, it will be a true history lesson right here on Grooving Radio. Jamaica, Jamaica, Jamaica. Did you all know that there was a refugee camp in Jamaica in the 40s? Camp Gibraltar, ladies and gentlemen. What was this refugee camp all about? And where was this refugee camp? It is said Camp Gibraltar is the same property that the University of the West Indies Mona Campus is built on. We're going to be going down to Jamaica this morning to talk to a professor, yes indeed, from the University of the West Indies, Dr. Canute Thompson. He's also a renowned, world-known author, ladies and gentlemen. I welcome Professor Dr. Canute Thompson once again to Grooving Radio. Good morning, Professor. How are you? Professor? Professor, how are you? Professor, are you there? Professor, are you there, sir? Hold on. I wonder what happened to Professor Thompson. Let me do this, ladies and... Professor? I am hearing you in the background, Professor. Good morning, Professor. How are you? Oh, wow. 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 Professor? Dr. Thompson? Ladies and gentlemen, let me do this and try and reconnect once again to Professor Canute Thompson. Professor, are you
there? I'm right here.
Oh, wow, wow. Professor has now joined us. So I'm not sure if you heard my...
I can hardly hear you.
Hold on. You can hardly hear me?
Yes.
I wonder what's going on here. Let me do this, Professor. Wow. I think everything is up. Everything... Are you hearing me better now, Professor?
Slightly better, but let's work with it now.
Okay, okay. Well, ladies and gentlemen, we're now joined by Professor Dr. Canute Thompson from the University of the West Indies. And this morning, once again, we're going to... We're in the classroom this morning, and we're going to be talking about Camp Gibraltar. What is Camp Gibraltar, ladies and gentlemen? It is said that Camp Gibraltar was a refugee camp in Jamaica in the 1940s, and we're going to be looking at where the University of the West Indies Mona Campus is built. So once again, we welcome author and Professor Canute Thompson. How are you doing this morning, Professor?
I'm doing well, thanks. Thanks for having me, and good morning to your listeners. Good morning to you.
Indeed, indeed. How is Jamaica this morning before we go any further? How is Jamaica doing this morning, Professor?
That's always a difficult question to answer. in terms of our weather situation, it's bright and sunny.
Mm-hmm.
We've been having rains, and so the drought has lifted in some key areas where we are dependent on the natural supply of water.
Mm-hmm.
for farming. The storage in the dams has improved. Politically, I suppose the big news this morning is the court, the result of the court's judgment,
mm-hmm.
or the court's judgment in relation to the government's decision to make Portmore a parish.
Mm-hmm.
All indications suggest that it was intended to become law and be implemented ahead of the next general election.
Mm-hmm.
What the court has said that it really cannot happen, and the government has been asked to give an unequivocal undertaking,
mm-hmm.
That it will follow the law and the constitution. Which means that the parish status cannot happen before September, not before 2026, actually.
Wow.
That can't happen.
Wow. That is big, big news coming out of Jamaica. And that may be a blow to the ruling government, the Jamaica Labour Party, at this time, because many here in the diaspora thought this Portmore thing was a done deal. So obviously it is not a done deal. A brakes has been put on Portmore becoming the 15th parish of Jamaica. Well, let's get into the conversation this morning, Professor Canute Thompson. Mm-hmm. Camp Gibraltar. What was Camp Gibraltar? For those who don't know.
Yes. So Camp Gibraltar was a location at which soldiers who fought in World War II had been encamped. It was a base from which they would operate. It had the various facilities of a war camp, ammunition, hospital, or might I say, care services, akin to a hospital. You had your protective barriers. You had your various command centers and so on.
Mm-hmm.
So it really was a massive piece of real estate used as a base to which persons would be recruited,
mm-hmm.
at which they would be trained, and from which they would be deployed for the war.
Mm-hmm.
Bear in mind that at the time, mm-hmm. Jamaica was a colony,
mm-hmm.
and was fully under the control of the British. And so Jamaicans would have been called up to fight in the war,
mm.
would be housed initially at Camp Gibraltar.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Now, that particular piece of property, if I'm not mistaken, some would say it was actually farmlands where slaves used to be before Camp Gibraltar. Hmm?
Correct, yes, yes. The entire, what you'd call... that area was called the Ligonie Lands.
Mm-hmm.
So what we know as Ligonie, we have an area called Ligonie Avenue,
mm-hmm.
that runs east to west from Mona to what is called the town of Ligonie or Matilda's Corner.
Mm-hmm.
And that's called Ligonie Avenue. And then you have the Ligonie Club, which is in the New Kingston area.
Mm-hmm.
But in the days of slavery, all that piece of land from what is now Oxford Road up to the foot of the Mona Hills, if you will, the Millsboro Hills, all that piece of land was sugarcane lands,
mm-hmm.
nice and flat.
Mm-hmm.
And it was called the Ligonie Plains.
Mm-hmm.
Ligonie Plain. Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
This,
go ahead, sorry.
This piece of history, though, Professor Canoe Thompson, for some forsake reason, many Jamaicans from way back then and even today may have no idea about Camp Gibraltar and the role that the campus where the University of the West Indies is today, the role it played during World War II.
Yes. Right. So as I said, for both wars, both the 1914 war and the 1939 war, that area was used as a camp for training and a port from which they would be deployed. But in 1940, at the end of the war,
mm-hmm.
Simultaneously with the end of the war, the government of the UK, the British government, began to take stock of the parallel state of the colony, let's say, and that's where they would use the colonies, and they wondered what might be the steps they need to take to address the needs of the colonies in this post-war era,
mm-hmm.
bearing in mind that many who fought in the war had come back home,
mm-hmm.
Needed some kind of care,
mm-hmm.
and in addition to that, many who were ex-slaves and the descendants of slaves,
mm-hmm.
who were resident on the islands,
right,
were struggling to meet health needs and other basic needs. So
mm-hmm.
there was an Asquith Commission,
mm-hmm.
That prepared a report in about 1914, thereabouts.
Mm-hmm.
This was during the war. The commission was working. And bear in mind that no conflict was taking place on the islands themselves. The war was being fought in Europe,
mm-hmm.
but soldiers were being conscripted from here to go to Europe. So there was no war taking place on the island of Jamaica.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So as the government of the UK sought to address the problems of disease and hunger and inadequate health services on the island, they established this commission, which reported back and said that one of the ways the government could respond to the crises that the country faces, that the colony faces, was to establish a hospital and a medical school.
Mm-hmm.
And now the hospital would have been built for, it was called the youth, when it was finally established, it was called the University Hospital, all right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
University College Hospital. Okay? And growing up in the 60s, you call it UC.
UC, so, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right. So, as I said, for the purposes of the war, they would have had some medical services there.
Mm-hmm.
And when they decided to respond to the crises of ill health across the country,
mm-hmm.
the decision was taken to strengthen the hospital and establish a medical school.
Mm-hmm.
So the first faculty of the University of the West Indies was a medical school, which was established in 1948
mm-hmm.
on the Gibraltar lands, all right?
Right.
Utilizing the old barracks buildings,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
And utilizing the medical services that had been left over from the war and then now upgraded it to whatever it was at the time, to whatever upgrade was at the time.
Mm-hmm.
So we had the school, the University of the West Indies, with this medical faculty, utilizing the post-war resources of the Gibraltar property. Yeah,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And that's how we're founded.
Wow! So you could say now the University of the West Indies would be officially
77 years this year. Yeah.
Yes, somewhere around here. You know, Professor Kanu Thompson. It's very interesting.
To note that when we're first established, our first name was University College of the West Indies.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
UCWI.
Uh-huh.
And the hospital, which was part of the, because they need to have a hospital when they have a medical faculty.
Mm-hmm.
The hospital we refer to, it was a university, it was UHWI, University Hospital of the West Indies.
Right.
That's its current name, yes. Uh-huh.
You know, funny it is, you know, Professor Kanu Thompson, I grew up in the surrounding area, in the Mona Heights area. And you know, my mother actually worked at the University of the West Indies. And it never dawned on me, growing up in that area, to ever question, why is it called UC? Why is it called UC? We never dove into that part of the history. So once I started stumbling up on some of this information about Camp Gibraltar, and it used to be slave property, and it's now the property that the University of the West Indies is built on, it kind of tickled my curiosity to dig a little bit deeper and to get this part of the history out there, Professor Kanu Thompson. So I thank you for joining us. I thank you for being a part of this conversation. Now, it is also said that there are some original buildings that still remain. Some original buildings that still remain there.
Including
the Sacred Heart Church building, at which over 1,000 Roman Catholic refugee used to worship back then, you know, between the 1940s and 1944.
Yes.
Are these buildings, what are some of the names of these buildings?
So, for those of you listeners who know the campus,
mm-hmm.
there are two main gates on the southern side. The main gate to the Mona campus, which is across from the regional headquarters, and then what we call the post office gate.
Mm-hmm.
There is a back gate at Irving Hall, and then the gate from the hospital.
Mm-hmm.
But the main entrances are on the south side. Now, that road that runs from the post office
mm-hmm.
up to Irving Hall, that's called Gibraltar Road.
Mm-hmm.
It's called Gibraltar Road. And most of the buildings, not all, some new ones have been put up there in recent times, but many of the buildings on this, might I say, on the right-hand side, on the eastern side of the road, are there from the post-war days.
Mm-hmm.
These buildings have been retained, and they represent the architecture of the time.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So
mm-hmm.
so we still have remnants of war, might I say, war architecture
mm-hmm.
On the campus there.
Now, is there any information that we can find out now about and why did the UK choose Jamaica? Why Jamaica? Because
that's a brilliant question. All right. So I would suggest that there are three reasons.
Mm-hmm.
The first is that because it was a camp site
mm-hmm.
and had assets, if you will, that were easily utilized,
mm-hmm.
Then it would be the natural place at which you'd want to set up a tertiary institution, a college, a university. And then our name, what it said was, we were a university college of the West Indies. We were a college
mm-hmm.
of London, all right?
Mm-hmm.
That was 1948. It wasn't until 1962 that we became the University of the West Indies, UWI, all right?
Mm-hmm.
So, but to your question, the first one was that there were already existing resources. If you will, it was a kind of brownfield.
Mm-hmm.
So for cost purposes and for ease of implementation,
mm-hmm.
you'd want to choose a site where you already have some resources
mm-hmm.
rather than a green field where you have to start bulldoze and clear land and put up structures.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a natural selection. The second is that it was the largest, Jamaica was the largest plantation site, was the largest population of the English-speaking Caribbean.
Mm-hmm.
And so in terms of impact on a needy population, it could see itself having an easier, having a greater presence. I mean, when implementing a solution, you sometimes want to pilot test it in a small area.
Mm-hmm.
So they could have chosen Barbados or one of the smaller islands. But because of the first reason, where we already had this launch site, this campsite, this war camp,
mm-hmm.
they would have chosen that. And then the second, of course, the population. The third I would suggest is that there was already some amount of medical work being done
mm-hmm.
By various expatriates on the island,
mm-hmm.
and so the capacity to commence work in the area desired was there. Now, if you know, so to come back to the beauty of this plantation, the beauty of the lands that were used as a plantation. There's an area called College Commons,
mm-hmm.
Which is a nice, large flat land on which the housing accommodation for the expatriate nurses, the expatriate professors and lecturers
mm-hmm.
were. So Jamaica was a pearl. And it was a prize location for people to come to have a good life,
mm-hmm.
to work and teach, as well as to enjoy the beauty of the Isles.
Mm-hmm.
So the selection of Jamaica was for a number of both strategic, economic, and might I say, lifestyle reasons.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to Grooving Radio. We are in our featured segment. It is called Mic Check, Sparking Global Changes. This morning, we are in the classroom. We have dived into some history this morning, and it is the history behind Camp Gibraltar. That is the property that the University of the West Indies is currently on, the Mona campus in Jamaica. And our very special guest this morning is author and Professor Dr. Knute Thompson from the University of the West Indies. You know, Professor, oftentimes we wonder, how is it? And others outside of Jamaica will look at Jamaica and say, boy, them Jamaican people bossy, them Jamaican people in everything. And we have a very rich history, you know. We have a very rich history. And we need to know We need to know our story, and we need to tell our story, because without us telling our story, how are we going to know? And for some reason, this piece of prime real estate, located between, surrounded by Papine, Augustown, Elliston Flats, and all the surroundings area, where the campus of the University of the West Indies currently sits on, celebrating their 79th anniversary this year. 77th anniversary this year. Some wonder why. Some wonder why. Why and how did Camp Gibraltar ended up there? And what was that property used for from the early 1900s to the mid to late 1940s? And hence, this morning, we are getting first-hand information from a professor out of the University of the West Indies. At the top of the hour, Professor, we're going to say goodbye to some of our partners, broadcasting partners this morning, which include the team at Irie Jam Radio and Hot 97.1 FM HD3. Erwin Clare will take over at 11 o'clock. So we say thank you so much to the good folks over there at Irie Jam Radio for carrying us live every Saturday morning from 9 a.m. until 11 a.m. We continue.
Tell me, can you say something before you go, though?
No, we're not going yet, man. We're just saying goodbye to one of our partners. We will continue the conversation, okay. Professor. We will continue right here. No. Some of the history of the University of the West Indies, because the University of the West Indies have turned out countless Nobel Peace Prize winner, a few prime ministers. This institution have a very, very rich history, Professor Kanu Thompson. Talk to us about that.
Okay, excellent. Thank you very much. So we were formed as a university in 1948 with a first campus at Mona. But 12 years later, in 1960, the St. Augustine campus was formed in Trinidad and Tobago, all right? And it's instructive to note that campus would have been formed using what was at the time the Tropical School for Food and Agriculture. So that college that was already there in Trinidad was incorporated into and became the St. Augustine, the second campus of the University of the West Indies. And so when we talk about the formation with in Kingston, that was the first campus, and then in 66, the campus at Cave Hill in Barbados was formed. And then as recently as 6 years ago, in 2019, our fifth campus was formed in Antigua. So we have four landed campuses and a global campus. What we now know as a global campus started out as the Department of Extramural Studies, which was founded by the late Sir Rex Nettleford. So it was a kind of it was later then called the School of Continuing Studies, which was a school that trained public sector workers, large in Jamaica, but as we expanded across the island using what we call at the time UIDEC and then UIDITE, which is a distant learning tool. And then what moved from Department of Extramural Studies to the School of Continuing Studies to UIDEC and UIDITE, then later came to be known as the Open Campus. And about 5 years ago, the name was changed to the Global Campus. All right.
Okay.
So that's a bit on the history. Let me talk to history of the campuses. Let me answer your primary question now about some of the graduates. So yes, we have many of our prime ministers are UWE alumni, including Dr. Kenny Anthony, Dr. Ralph Gonzalez, Dr. Andrew Honus. They're all graduates of the UWE, among others. But our great historical figures, laureates, we have Sir Arthur Lewis, Sir Derek Walcott, among our Nobel laureates. We also have the name is eluding me just now. I'll come back to that as soon as I recall. Mm-hmm. But the big point to be made is that in the current dispensation, mm-hmm. We have a brilliant bunch or a bunch of brilliant scholars who are making waves across the research space and finding solutions to various problems. Mm-hmm. I'll mention one young researcher who has found a cure for prostate cancer. Mm. All right, Dr. Badu. All right. Then we are the leading university when it comes to climate studies. Mm-hmm. The UN and the UNESCO has designated University of West Indies as the number one advocate for climate studies. Mm-hmm. And our work in climate studies began 30 years ago in 1995, so mm-hmm. we're not a newcomer to this area mm-hmm. of studying global warming and the related problems. Yes. Mm-hmm. And of course, as you know, we have a number of patents, including patents related to cardiology mm-hmm. And treatment of various pests that affect agriculture. As you know, as I said, you know, we started, our Trinidad campus started out as a food and agricultural college. Mm-hmm. So across the 77 years, we have had major impact in various areas mm-hmm. of study. And now also our newest campus, mm-hmm. the Five Islands campus, is doing major work in the area of AI technology and utilizing AI as a tool to advance teaching and learning in ways that are reflective of a proactive use of a tool that many saw as a threat initially.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know, Professor Kanu Thompson, you just kind of unnerved me just now in terms of the brilliance of some of the folks who, who came out and is coming out and has come out of the University of the West Indies. You know, and it brings me to this, because one of the things that we as black and brown men suffer from the most is actually prostate cancer. And you know, I'm going to have to talk to you about this, because I would need some information on the doctor who have found that cure for prostate cancer.
Yeah.
We need to present him here on Grooving Radio. And
her, actually. I can certainly link her up with you.
Definitely, Professor Kanu Thompson. Now I want to go back to Camp Gibraltar, and this question is in my head. And is there anything else that Camp Gibraltar was used for, or did folks leave Camp Gibraltar at any time to migrate to the U.S. like some of those Polish folks who came to Jamaica? Was Camp Gibraltar used for anything else other than...
Yes, right. So, yeah. So in 1963, thank you very much. Mm-hmm. So as I said, we started in 1948. And in 1963, mm-hmm. As the country faced a polio outbreak, mm-hmm. A young man named John Golding mm-hmm. came to Jamaica as an orthopedic expert mm-hmm. To assist with the rehabilitation and recovery of people who are suffering from polio. Mm-hmm. John Golding is the father, the late father of Mark Golding, mm-hmm. the current leader of the opposition. Mm-hmm. And that was 1953, mm-hmm. 4 years, roughly, call it 5 years, after the hospital was established. So orthopedics mm-hmm. became one of the most critical and outstanding departments of the university. Mm-hmm. And over time, as the demand for services to deal with polio and other orthopedic-related problems emerged, mm-hmm. the Mona Rehab Center was established. Yes, now known as the John Golden Rehab Center. He having dedicated his life to developing and expanding that facility. And so bear in mind though that wartime injury, a major perhaps the most common wartime injury that can be addressed through restoration is orthopedic injury. You break a leg, you break a hand, and so on, all right? Or rib, and so on. But bear in mind that once you get a major blow to your torso, you're not likely to survive that, and that would require not so much orthopedic intervention, but cardiovascular interventions. But so many of the wartime injuries that persons suffered on the battlefield, they would get the immediate intervention on the battlefield at the battle hospital, and then as they stabilized, they would be sent home for continuing care closer to home. And this is where the University Hospital of the West Indies, with an orthopedic unit, was critical in supporting wartime recovery. And so that was a critical part of the post-war Camp Gibraltar reality.
Indeed, indeed. You know, it's again, ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to Grooving Radio. You're listening to, we're in our featured segment. It is called Mic Check. Getting an history lesson this morning on Camp Gibraltar, which is the property that the University of the West Indies is Mona Campus currently sits on in Jamaica. Our very special guest this morning is author and professor, Dr. Knute Thompson. You know, interestingly, Professor, when I was growing up, and it's also interesting, listeners, for you to understand this. If you know the Mona Heights area, if you know the Papine area, if you know Elliston Flats, if you know Augustown Hermitage, and you know anything about the campus of the University of the West Indies, at the bottom of the campus of the University of the West Indies sits the Polio Institution, and also there used to be a large laundry facility at the bottom before you get down to Augustown, where the swimming pool and the football field and everything is. It's funny how Mark Golan's father actually treated me when I broke my leg in high school, you know, playing football, and I oftentimes tell people that, boy, you know, I never knew how much, polio did affect Jamaica. And, you know, it is also said that, you know, Mr. Dr. John Golden was the one who helped to eradicate polio out of Jamaica. And again, that's why we do these presentation to highlight these things that some of us did not know. Some of us are just getting to know these things. Another question here, Professor Knute Thompson. Jewish refugees, they were in Jamaica at one time, huh?
Yes, we had Jews coming to Jamaica. I'm not quite familiar with the entire history of that, but yes, in the period post war. Well, let's go back to the prior century, when we began to have the indentured laborers, and the persons from East Asia, the Chinese, the Lebanese, and other non-black, non-Caucasian ethnic groups. They began to come in the late 1800s into the early 1900s. But I would not proffer an informed opinion on the influx of Jews specifically. Off-air with that element of the history.
Indeed. Now, when you look at Jamaica, this little dot on the map, and you look at the role Jamaica has played, and we have played many roles, because I think there was an editorial in yesterday's Gleaner talking about apartheid and the role that Jamaica play, and how Jamaica now is identifying what's happening in the United States of America. You know, some are looking at that as apartheid 2.0 coming from this current administration. Jamaica is a very special place, huh? Very, very special. Yeah.
Well, I can say a quick word on that. So let's again root ourselves in 1948 with the formation of the University of the Western News. 10 years later, in 1959, under then Premier Norman Manley, Jamaica adopted a most far-reaching, visionary, and radical position on apartheid. And it was under Norman Manley that Jamaica took the view that it would become, it would be leading in the struggle for the end of apartheid in South Africa, as far as 1959. And that war, that battle against apartheid, grew stronger in the 1970s. Took a kind of nosedive in the 1980s, but had a resurgence in the 1990s. And if you recall, when Nelson Mandela was freed, Jamaica was the first country he visited.
Wow. Yep. I remember that. And I also remember having a conversation with a legendary Jamaican artist, Mr. Jimmy Cliff, the Montagonian, who would tell us that, you know, back in the days, he would go to South Africa and they would go above the prison where Nelson Mandela was, and they would be beating their drums and playing their music, and Nelson Mandela would ask, who are those folks? And they'll say, the Jamaicans. And, you know, folks need, listen, it is oftentimes says the more you know, the better it is. And boy, the role that we have played, we as Jamaicans have played in world history, it is indeed such an amazing, amazing world. Gibraltarians, they say, Professor Canute Thompson, some of them were also evacuated and later on taken to places like Scotland and Northern Ireland and stuff like that. So not only that they were in Jamaica, they were actually also taken to places such as Scotland and Northern Ireland. So, boy, Jamaica. Before we wrap this conversation, though, Professor, before we wrap this conversation, Professor, is there anything else you want to share on this subject matter? Because I want to talk about your latest book. I'm about to pick it up today.
All right, sure. So I want to say two things. That as one of the missions of the University of the West Indies currently, under the leadership of our Vice Chancellor, Professor Sir Hilary Beckles, there are three major pillars on which we are building our strategy. Access, alignment, and agility. By access, what we mean is repurposing and restructuring the university, and through strategic partnerships with various stakeholders, particularly governments and the private sector, creating access so as to increase the number of people who are enjoying, benefiting from, and acquiring skills at the tertiary level. 40 years ago, in the 1980s, the percentage of the population that had access to higher education was about 3 to 5%. 3% in Jamaica, up to say 5%, and higher in a place like Barbados, which had introduced a policy and maintained a policy of free tertiary education. Today, access in Jamaica stands at about 27%, with Barbados and Trinidad being in the 60s. Non-landed campus countries which don't have a campus, and and notwithstanding campus in St. Antigua, which is recent, they are 25% or less. Some are in the teens. Mm-hmm. What, this one, the goal of the University of the West Indies is to build out a partnership arrangement across our governments so that we can have access going up to 50%.
Mm-hmm.
All right?
Mm-hmm.
Countries in the in Asia and the OECS region and Oceania, they enjoy participation mm-hmm. up to levels of 80-90% mm-hmm. in some cases, mm-hmm. certainly high sixes. And the development of those countries is linked to, correlated with, the number of high school graduates mm-hmm. that move on to tertiary studies.
Mm-hmm.
In the West Indies, in the Caribbean, we have one of the lowest levels, all right?
Wow.
So one of the things that's pressing is to increase access.
Mm-hmm.
So, for example, a couple of years ago, there were those who suggested that we should increase our fees mm-hmm. by 100% in order to remain viable as a university, as we face the effects of both the 2008 global recession and the 2019-2020 COVID pandemic
mm-hmm.
and its impact. The university, under the leadership of Sir Hilaire Beckles, insisted that if we were to double tuition, it would mean that we would be denying access to the majority.
Indeed.
And so we are holding firmly mm-hmm. at keeping tuition at 20% of our overall income base,
mm-hmm.
all right?
Mm-hmm.
Rather than trying to move it to 40%, in order to ensure access. And that's mm-hmm. an important point we want to make.
Indeed.
All right?
Indeed.
What we are seeking to do as a consequence is to strengthen our partnerships with industry through alignment.
Mm-hmm.
So remember, so there are three A's: access, alignment, and agility.
Mm-hmm.
So by strengthening our alignment with the business sector, we hope to then earn income by providing various consulting services and technical services in order for us to earn revenue, all right?
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, there's agility, where we want to be responsive and alert
mm-hmm.
and nimble
mm-hmm.
In grasping opportunities for expanding access and for building partnerships and alignment.
Indeed.
Just need to share that.
Indeed. You know, I got to say kudos to Professor Hilaire Beckles, and I'm hoping to catch up with Professor Beckles next week, Friday, as he heads to New York to take part in the American Foundation for the University of the West Indies Legacy Gala, the 28th
yes.
annual one. You know, and I also remember it clearly in 2019 when Sir Hilaire Beckles actually was kind of in a little, you know, back and forth with Prime Minister Dr. Andrew Michael Olness about that whole, you know, fee thing and money's been taken away from, you know, whatever. So I got to say kudos to Sir Hilaire Beckles on what he is doing. So once again, ladies and gentlemen, it is Grooving Radio. Our special guest this morning is author and professor Dr. Kanu Thompson. Taking a look, yeah, we took a look at Camp Gibraltar, the current property that University of the West Indies, the Mona campus, is built on. I keep saying, Arthur, you have a new book out, Dr. Kanu Thompson. Well, no, put on your yes. author hat now. You're now the author.
Yes.
Tell us about, before you go, tell us about okay. the new book you have.
Thank you. So the new book is called Reimaginative Leadership.
Mm-hmm.
The word reimaginative is not yet in the dictionary. It's a new word that I've coined to describe what I'm doing mm-hmm. as I study leadership. It's called Reimaginative Leadership,
mm-hmm.
Concepts and Applications. And so in the first part of the book, I examine and discuss extensively 9 concepts of reimaginative leadership, 9 concepts,
mm-hmm.
including the first one we call alternative thinking,
mm-hmm.
all right?
Mm-hmm.
In another program, we can go into looking at what alternative thinking is.
Indeed.
The other 8 qualities include courage and mutual accountability.
Mm-hmm.
And then there will be the other 6. So let's mention those 3 for the purposes of the brevity of our conversation.
Indeed.
And then in the second part of the book, I draw examples from around the world in seeking to show how these qualities have been demonstrated and exercised, and therefore to call on the current generation of politicians, of leadership practitioners, and others, leaders in every sphere, to adopt and model these qualities of reimaginative leadership. Among the examples I list of demonstrations of reimaginative leadership where courage and mutual accountability have been illustrated are names like Martin Luther King, mm-hmm. a guy named Carl Barth, mm-hmm. Mayor Motley, mm-hmm. Jacinda Ardern, former Prime Minister of New Zealand, Peter Phillips, Dr. Peter Phillips, mm-hmm. whose pivotal work in rescuing the Jamaican economy in 2012 mm-hmm. has received recognition from the World Bank and the IMF and the Financial Times. And one of the key points I made about the contribution of Dr. Peter Phillips is not so much his what people may call his political genius mm-hmm. or his economic brilliance, but it was the fact that he was able to get the Jamaican citizen mm-hmm. to buy into making a massive sacrifice to contribute to the stabilization of the economy.
Indeed.
So that during those years of wage freeze mm-hmm. and notional increases in salaries with one-off payments of $25,000 twice a year, mm-hmm. Increased taxes to really meet the primary surplus targets and ensure a certain level of financial stability, mm-hmm. that he was able to get the Jamaican population to believe and buy into that.
Indeed.
Was, I believe, a capacity to build, demonstrated a capacity to build trust. And trust building is yet another leadership reimaginative quality.
Indeed.
You have to be able to win people's trust.
Yes.
If you're going to get them on board with any long-term project.
Indeed. Indeed. Yes. You know, Professor, before you go, you know, I like to say that Dr. Peter Phillips is one of the brightest minds, one of our brightest leaders ever that never became Prime Minister. You know, interestingly, you brought that up at the end of the conversation. But yeah, we're going to come back. You're going to come back in the very, very near future. And we're going to take a look at this book. We're going to take an in-depth look at this book because, again, the more you know, the better it is. Ladies and gentlemen, my very special guest this morning is no stranger to Grooving Radio, Professor, author, Dr. Canute Thompson. And I must tell you, now, after you leave this morning, Professor Thompson, I will be engaging Miss Anne-Marie Grant, who is actually the executive director for the American Foundation for the University of the West Indies. She's going to be coming up in our final segment this morning to talk about the 28th annual Legacy Gala. Your closing remarks this morning, Professor Canute Thompson, based on what we see going on here in these United States, and it seems to be a changing world. Your closing remarks before you go this morning, sir.
Thank you very much. My closing words.
Yes, your closing words. Closing remarks.
Yes.
Go ahead.
Yes, so I'm saying, I would say two things. One, I'm grateful for the opportunity to share with you and your listeners. Look forward to your listeners becoming contributors to the work of the University of the West Indies.
Mm-hmm.
Look forward to more conversations about the research we're doing.
Indeed.
And hope that you will join in the list, your listeners will join in the list of those who are providing scholarships
mm-hmm.
and bursaries to support students in our country, in this case Jamaica, but in our islands generally, to access tertiary education,
indeed,
which is a gate to a brighter future.
Indeed. Thank you so much, Professor Canute Thompson. As always, sir, it is my privilege and it's an honor to have you here on Grooving Radio, sharing with our listening audience here in the diaspora. It is indeed an amazing thing, sir, and I thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
Talk to you soon, sir. One love. Most blessing. Bye-bye. Most blessing. Ladies and gentlemen, we have come to the end of our featured segment, Mic Check. That was Dr. Professor, Canute Thompson, author. This morning's conversation, history conversation, ladies and gentlemen, surrounding Camp Gibraltar, the property that the University of the West Indies currently sits on, the Mona campus, that is.